Blog Talk Radio.
You've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked. Bamboozled. Led astray. Run on my.
Welcome to Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, your host. Thank you for being with us tonight, speaking truth to power and ourselves. Our Common Ground, talk that matters.
We declare our rank on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rank of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary.
And good evening to you. This is Our Common Ground. Thank you for being with us here at Blog Talk Radio, speaking truth to power and ourselves tonight. Our guest, cultural and political commentator, Plato Benjamin, and I'll tell you more about him a little bit later. My co-host, Alpho of the Alpho Show. Mr. Alpho, you had a really hot show this afternoon at TruthWorks Network. Thank you very much, and good evening.
Well, good evening, Janice, and thank you. I'm looking forward to our scheduled guests, and hope I can get a word in edgewise.
Well, Alpho, I think that you did capture the issues of the day today. Been looking at some news items all over the world, and I understand that our president is now calling for the stepping down of President Gaddafi, indicating that he has lost his legitimacy to rule and that he must resign. And we all laugh after we read those words. Sure he will. And that protesters are still present in Wisconsin. Al-Qaeda, the name Al-Qaeda is coming up again in relationship to a revolt against Arab rulers. Really interesting. But one of the big news items that I noted today, and I'm not sure why even the independents do this, but I'm sure and know why the New York Times does it. It's an article that I saw in the New York Times this morning in regard to the big fish and who will be caught. And there's a huge picture of Angelo Mozilla, the former chief executive of Countrywide Financials, and prosecutors have found it tough to build cases against these executives whose companies helped kindle the financial crisis, especially the mortgage crisis. And I'm not understanding that in an article about the Justice Department, the Los Angeles Times said prosecutors had concluded that Mozilla's actions did not amount to criminal wrongdoing. That's one thing. But the other thing is this. I'm not sure that our legislators are responding to that conclusion by the Department of Justice by saying, well, if it isn't a crime, it should be a crime. So, you know, and it's buried in on Saturday, and no one will be held accountable for our system You know, part of this is one of the reasons these people are going to get away, whether it's Bank of America who doesn't pay taxes, whether it's Mozilla who milked millions of people on legal instruments. I mean, we're looking at, especially on foreclosures and some of the stuff, we have to recognize that legal instruments, the courts, were used to sign off on many of these transactions that caused the economic collapse, especially in the housing industry. And it's partly because the federal government threw enormous resources at these investigations, and over 1,000 FBI agents were involved. And the government's attitude was that it would do whatever it took to bring crooked bank executives to justice. Now here we are, after all of those resources are being have been used, the executives are howling that they were unfairly prosecuted, and the cases against them were rooted in a simple concept of theft. We're saying that they won't be prosecuted. I'm not getting it, and it's buried in on Saturday, and I'm going to be looking for what legislator is going to say, okay, if we couldn't get these people by the laws that exist, what laws do we need to create to make sure that the next time around, and there will be a next time, the next time around, they will be prosecuted under law, and to make it easier. The other, I should congratulate you out in Chicago. You've got a new mayor. How's that going for you?
Yeah. New mayor. We got a double down. They just got the same a smarter idiot than the one we had. Someone who's smarter than the idiot that we had. Hard to catch. He'll be twice as hard to catch, and he will be twice as devastating to what this city really needs. This man is, you know, I cannot emphasize as much as he has ill-advised this president.
Yeah.
And I looked at it like that, but
they're
cut from the same cloth.
You wonder what dots people are following. Well, let's get started here at Our Common Ground. And once again, for those of you who are listening, you can join Our Common Ground chatters at blogtalkradio.com/OCG. Our guest tonight, Playfill Benjamin, he is a producer of Commentaries on the Times, which he writes and delivers on WBAI Radio in New York City. He's a producer with the Midnight Ravers, a long-running show exploring the world of art and politics, which has won several radio awards for excellence in programming. He is an award-winning journalist who has been nominated for the Pulitzer Prize in two different categories, Explanatory Journalism, Village Voice in 1988, and Distinguished Commentary, New York Daily News, 1995. From 1991 to 1996, Playfill Benjamin was a regular contributor to the Guardian Observer of London, where he wrote on politics, culture, and sports. At the Village Voice, Mr. Benjamin wrote important stories on politics and culture, and as the editorial columnist for the Daily News, he wrote about all the great issues of the day, and that is when I met Playfill Benjamin. He has been a guest on Our Common Ground a number of times, but let me tell you what important things he is doing today. His series, Commentaries on the Times, and he performs it over the airways of WBAI Radio and publishes the text online, formerly for the Black World Today and the Black Commentator. It is even more impressive than his daily news columns. His works, essays, and fiction are anthologized in several books, and he is the co-author of Reconsidering the Souls of Black Folks. And we hope that you will check him out. He is going to be joining us very shortly. And once again, thank you for being with us.
While it is smart politics for the president to continue to reach out to Republicans and invite them to participate in his efforts to restore the nation's health in principle, in practice, it's time for the Democrats to go gangster. Put on some brass knuckles and beat them down, employing any means necessary to realize the president's agenda. For it goes without saying that if the Republicans succeed in arresting the progress of this agenda, there will come a time in this century when America will no longer be the leading power in the world. From New York City, this is Plato Benjamin with a commentary on the time.
John has his ass out here right now because of all these security men here. You see him? If they were not here, I'd wait out here to whip his ass when he come up here right now. Because I believe Sean Hannity is trying to get Barack Obama assassinated, all right? Anybody who listens to his show can hardly conclude otherwise. But I'm and Sean Hannity, you are nothing but shanty Irish trash with money. That's what you are. And you're an ignoramus. You're overbearing. You are, in fact, an obscenity. You know, you shouldn't even be, you ought to be glad that your parents, your grandparents, or whoever it is, came from Ireland running from the potato famine. You better be glad they came to a country where you have a pigmentocracy. That is, because they're white, they automatically got a pass ahead of my grandparents, for sure. And I'm sick of you jumping on Barack every day. Why don't you, I'd love to debate you about Reverend Wright. I'd love to debate you about Louis Farrakhan. And I have written many pieces critical of Louis Farrakhan. Unlike you, you can't show one piece, one critique you ever did of the right, because you are a lackey for the right. You are nothing but a shill for the Republican Party and an ass kisser to the plutocrats. That's what you are. You know, a lapdog, an ass kisser to the rich and powerful who misleads ignorant working class white guys who think you're their friends. You'll be a friend, a millionaire punk, you understand, who's anti-labor, anti-union, anti-everything progressive. I would love to debate you. I don't want to be on your show. Unlike the reverend from Boston, I forget his name right now, who comes on there and kiss your ass because he want to be on your show. I don't want to be on your show. I want you to debate me in the Great Hall at Cooper Union, and I will whip your ignorant cracker ass, all right? All right.
This is our common ground. Tonight, our guest, Playfell Benjamin, cultural, political, and music commentator. We're glad to have you with us. Stay tuned. Benjamin, thank you so much for joining us once again at Our Common Ground. I'm so glad to have you back, brother. How are you?
How you doing? I was sitting here listening to the excerpts you played. It's funny. You should tell people if they want to see the circumstances under which this part of the commentary you played about Sean Hannity. They can actually go online and see this whole thing on YouTube. You know, just go online and put Playfell challenges racist white commentators on YouTube, and they'll see the whole thing. It's in two parts. What happened was, I just want to explain the circumstances here. This took place when Me and another guy, a friend of mine, Scott Pellegrino from Fair and Accuracy in Reporting, a very serious watchdog operation that looks, at the media.
You know, Scott is one of my friends on Facebook Friends.
Well, you know, it's funny because Scott is my real friend, but I had to unfriend him on Facebook. Because he'd be coming on my page, dropping stuff on my page and saying that I didn't like it. I warned him, you know, he kept, but I mean, and so I don't mind, you know, I'm all for open debate and discussion, but Scott is a bomb thrower. He has this technique that he developed when he used to call up these radio shows, and he had all kind of disguises, and they would be trying to block him, and he would always get through and say what he had to say. So he was doing this on my, using his tactics on me, so I had to unfriend him. But as you can see on the video, that I think very highly of him, and he is he's been a scourge to racists, you know, in the media. In fact, the way this whole event came about was he told me he had stopped a Radio and Records magazine was going to give a Lifetime Achievement Award to Bob Grant. And Bob Grant is the father of all this white hate radio that you hear now. I mean, he's the father of it in our time. There were people earlier in the 20th century like Father Coughlin who had used the airwaves for racist, you know, to incite people racially. But in our time, the hate radio you see now, people like, and TV, people like Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, all these people come from Bob Grant. So now they were going to give him a Lifetime Achievement Award. And so Scott heard about it with Radio and Records Magazine. He kicked up such a storm that they backed out of it and decided to just forget about it. But then Talkers Magazine, the magazine for talk show hosts and the radio, they were going to give him a Lifetime Award. In fact, they did. And that's what happened. We went down and tried to crash it, you know, and they wouldn't let us in because they had a ban on the press. So we stood outside, you know, and jeered them. And I was challenging Sean Hannity them to basically to a boxing match. You want to see if you see the video, you know what I mean? But the point is that...
Yeah, I saw that little ditty.
But I think that this kind of talk that Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck engage in, I think that they're getting people killed. You know, I think that Bill O'Reilly is directly responsible for the murder of Dr. Benjamin Tiller. Now he put this guy's name on his show. Night after night, he's the one that named him Tiller the Baby Killer. Put the guy's address on the air. I mean, it's amazing to me that they can do this and nobody says anything about it. I mean, Bill O'Reilly should be disgraced. Nobody should be listening to him at all. I think that he incited the murder of Dr. Tiller, just like I think that Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh incited this guy, Richard Popolowski, to murder those cops in Pittsburgh. These cops were coming on what they thought was a routine domestic domestic disturbance charge because the guy's mother had called him because she had become disturbed about him. The police are coming here. They think they're coming on a routine call. This guy jumps out of the shadows with a flak jacket on and an AK-47, and murders three cops in cold blood. And then when they interview the guy, they find out that he's been going to these right wing to these fascist websites like Stormfront, and he's been writing all kind of crazy stuff online. And when they talk to him, he's talking about how he thought, you know, Barack Obama was coming to take his guns and he's going to take his guns and the black people were going to slave white people. All this kind of crazy stuff that you hear Glenn Beck and him talking all the time. So I have a piece, and I just want to say, when you were talking about my radio commentaries, the text of them in extended form can be read online at commentariesonthetimes.wordpress.com. There are 230 of them on there. And all of these pieces I'm mentioning are on there. But there's a section called On Right-Wing Bloviators and Pundits. And that's where I take on all of these right-wingers. And there's a piece on there in which I accuse them of having blood on their hands. And I list a whole list of killings that have happened in this country that I blame them for directly. And when you listen to what these people say about why they did it, like the guy who shot up the Holocaust Museum and killed this black guard, shot a couple of them, one of them he killed. When you listen to what this guy say, the themes in what they're saying are the same themes you hear being repeated over and over ad infinitum on these right-wing shows on WABC and Fox Network. So I see them, and most important about this particular event at Talkers Magazine is what I have to say about Arthur Frommer, the Jewish lawyer who graduated from Yale Law School just about near the end of World War II. He was recruited in the military, and he was put in an intelligence unit, and he was sent to Germany. And the task of his unit was to find out how it was possible for Adolf Hitler, a house painter, failed artist and house painter, how it was possible for this guy to convince the most intellectually advanced nation in the world that it was a good idea to kill 6 million of their countrymen. And the main what he concluded was is that they concluded that the main way he did it was through the use of radio, through programming these hate messages on radio and lies, big lies that have no basis in fact, which is exactly what they do on Fox, what Glenn Beck does, and what Rush Limbaugh and them do. The kind of things they say about President Obama, there's no wonder there are people who talk about, as within the Congress was leading the other day, who talk about shooting him and right-wing militias who use his picture for target practice and that kind of stuff. I have been worried ever since Barack was running and it looked like he might win, that they could incite somebody to assassinate him. And I still worry about that. And so does the Secret Service, because they get more messages about that with him. They've gotten more threats of increased. They've increased four or five-fold. So that's the reason that I went down there and attacked that meeting, because it was an outrage that they would be giving this guy a Lifetime Achievement Award, because what is his achievement? The creation of an atmosphere of hatred and division that could actually destabilize this country.
Mr. Benjamin.
Yes.
Mr. Benjamin, Alpha. My name is Alpha.
How you doing?
Dennis. They give that a term. That term is stochastic terrorism. And that is simply the use of the mass media to incite someone to commit a violent act. And you're absolutely right, because that's exactly what they have done. Since before this man was elected president, they have been trolling for assassins for about 4 years now. And it's just remarkable that, you know, O'Reilly and Tiller the Baby Killer, Glenn Beck and the Tides Foundation, and ACLU assassin, potential assassin. What was his name? Williams? Byron Williams? And this man was on his way to commit mass murder before he was pulled over, and he had a firefight with the police officers, and that's the only thing that stopped him. Just by chance, they pulled him over. But stochastic terrorism, and it's simply amazing to me that there is no one in the media, there is no one who gets time in front of a camera who will call them out and call them exactly what that is.
Well, I tell you, you know, you see, it's a very touchy situation because the idea of freedom of speech, as all of us who engage in public discourse recognize, is a very important right. But these people are abusing it, you know. They're really abusing it. And you see, the right to free speech is not an absolute right. You can't, for instance, get up and yell fire in a crowded movie theater if there's no fire. These people are doing worse than yelling fire in a crowded theater. Think about back when the health care bill was coming up for a vote, and all these people showing up at public town meetings to discuss health care with guns. You know, they even showed up at rallies where the president was speaking with guns, even though the Secret Service kept them away. You know, they never got anywhere near him, and they had sharpshooters out there with them in their sights. But the fact that they would have the unmitigated gall, the audacity to show up at a presidential speech brandishing guns. Now, the question is, I'm writing a piece right now called, you know, should law-abiding black people arm themselves? And interestingly enough, one of the most interesting arguments I have in favor of this was Clarence Thomas's opinion in the case from Chicago, the brother from Chicago, the 78-year-old brother who applied for a gun, and couldn't get it. Well, Clarence Thomas's, which I just was looking at today, It's fantastic. Apparently, I'm shocked, you know, that Clarence Thomas would have written such an opinion. But then again, Clarence Thomas comes from the Deep South, you know, and he grew up at a time when white terrorism was quite common. And Clarence Thomas's argument is that, you know, law-abiding black people who do not have police records should have the right to buy and carry guns. And he said that the whole history of gun control laws in the United States began in the post-Reconstruction period, and the intention was to disarm black men in the face of white terror. I mean, it's an amazing opinion from Clarence Thomas. But it's a question that I'm asking here, and I found this stunning picture of Robert and Mabel Williams. I don't know if you remember them, the Monroe, North Carolina battle in 1960 in Monroe, North Carolina. Well, I have a fantastic picture of them with their guns in their hands, you know, which I'm going to put on the cover of this, because they were the first black people that I knew of who decided to give these crackers a taste of their own medicine, who stood up to the Klan. I mean, there were others.
There's actually a documentary on that, a PBS documentary called Guns and it's not a PBS. It's an independent called Guns and Something. I'll think of it during our program.
Well, there's a book called Negroes with Guns, and that's how
That's the name of Negroes.
Well, that's how I first heard about them, right? But as it turns out, this book was a result of a series of interviews that was done on WBI radio with Robert Williams when he was underground running from the FBI. And this producer did this series of interviews with him, and then they transcribed it and turned it into a book. And I read it. And that was when, you know, the first time that I heard about them, and this was like, this happened like in, with them, I think it was 1960 when it happened. And I saw the book about 1962 or something. It had a profound effect on my life. But the point is, let me just say this. I don't think that any of these white militias or anything have any chance of overthrowing the federal government. I think that anybody who thinks they can overthrow the American government with guns is out of their mind. However, they are dangerous. You know, and the danger of these people is that they can show up anywhere and start shooting any time. You know, you can just stumble upon them, you know, and some of them are riding around with guns looking for a chance, you know, to attack somebody. And that's the reason why I think black people need to own some guns. I mean, you know, it looks like all these white folks got guns, you know, and we need to have guns, you know. And now, mind you now, my preference is that nobody would have guns. I'd like it to be like it is in Canada or like it is in England, where nobody could have guns. But that's not the case. The case is that nobody will even talk about gun control. You can't even get a politician to talk about gun control, even after the murder, even the near murder of this congresswoman. You can't get, there's not been one person who has offered to submit a bill to deal with the fact that you got guns out here that can shoot 31 times, you know, this kind of stuff, or even question a gun control. And that is because of the power of the lobby, the gun
NRA,
yeah, the National Rifle Association.
I mean, so, to me,
yeah,
that's amazing. You know, I live here in Chicago, and since 1983, they've had this ban on guns just for the inner city.
Yeah,
for the inner city here now.
Yeah,
and you know, right now I'm 58. I've had a gun since I was 13. So you know, I'll say this, you know. Most of the reasoning behind this has spawned nothing but more violence because the perpetrators are going to get a gun, period. And it's the people without the guns that will, you know, that suffer.
I agree with you absolutely. I grew up in Florida. I grew up in a hunting community. Everybody had guns. And I used to notice when I was a boy that these rednecks were very arrogant. Until we would meet them in the woods when we would be at a hunting party. I would be with my grandfather and uncles and whatnot, where everybody was armed. And we'd be deep out in the piney woods. Them crackers was always so nice, you know. They were always so nice then, you see. And I saw that when I was a kid. You know, it's a very different story when they looking down the barrel of a gun. I mean, you got these Republicans running around here talking all this gun talk. This crazy woman out in Nevada who almost beat Harry Reid, you know, was talking about Second Amendment solutions if they don't get what they want. And that Alaskan barbarian, Sarah Palin, you know, putting people in gun sights and talking about locking and reloading and that kind of stuff. I mean, all that gun rhetoric and gun wheeling and whatnot. You know, I mean, I find myself thinking, you know, what's going to happen when somebody starts firing on them? You know, now it's everybody that they're talking about who are victims, you know. But what's going to happen when somebody decides, okay, enough of them. They like guns so much and start firing on them. Then we'll see, you know, what they have to say. Peter King, Republican here, proposed a bill that would prevent people from coming within so many feet of a public official with a gun and whatnot. They wouldn't even consider it.
Right. No, Sharon Angle's Second Amendment remedies and Joyce Kaufman's If We Can't Win at the Ballot Box, We'll Do It with Bullets. That was the woman from Florida. She has a radio spot, or she had a radio spot before this Alan West, this her house ninja.
Yeah, that black guy, the military
her,
guy.
What was it, the head of his staff? And her comments alone disqualified her. And I find it amazing. I mean, just amazing that you have this type of gun violence that's always thrown around. You have this guy involved with the attorney general who was talking about using live ammo in Wisconsin, the one that they just fired.
Yeah.
And it continues.
Yeah.
The only people who are practicing civility are the people, the progressives and the liberals.
Absolutely.
They've backed off.
But you see, also,
their aggression. They've simply backed off.
But don't leave Michelle Bachmann out of this, the congresswoman from Minnesota.
Oh, no.
She's the one who's talking about she wants her constituents armed and dangerous.
Right. You're absolutely right. And, oh, I mean, you can take it. I mean, it's just ridiculous the way they draw this false equivalency that somehow the people on the left do the same thing. They're just as responsible. And it's, you know, O'Reilly and Tiller, the baby killer, you know, the people, the abortion fanatic, and, you know, the author of Crazy for God, what's his name, Frank Schaefer?
Yeah.
How much more evidence do you need? I mean,
don't forget the representative from Arizona, who was just military-style attack on her meet and greet for her constituents, where she took a bullet in the brain.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Well, see,
has gone off the front page.
This woman had a bullseye put on her by Sarah Palin.
And Glenn Beck was talking about you got to shoot him in the head. And he said that over and over and over again prior to this shooting in Tucson.
So, I mean, you see, the thing is, they keep talking about these people's First Amendment and Second Amendment rights. If this were black people talking like this, if this was Louis Farrakhan talking like this, and somebody actually got shot, you would not hear the end of it. You understand? It would have been the end of him, you know, if that had happened. Now, when this woman got shot, after all of these right-wing rednecks have riled up the country with this talk about guns and shooting and that kind of stuff, but nobody is responsible for this. This guy's just crazy, you know? There's no connection to this other stuff. Look, both things can be true. The reason why this kind of rhetoric is so dangerous is precisely because there are people out there who are unbalanced, and they're sitting and listening to this stuff. Radio is a very intimate media, you know, and the television has a different kind of power. They both have a very, but radio, you know, you can listen to radio while you're doing whatever you're doing, you know, and it's like a really just conversation is going on, the one-way conversation between the person who's talking and the listener. If the way the emotional content of these rants that go on with Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and this guy Savage, and I mean, there's a whole lineup of them on WABC, you know, seemingly one worse than the other. But when you listen to these people all day long, and they're all wound up, you know, because, you know, they're performers. You see, this is the thing. The real irony and tragedy of all this is that I don't think Glenn Beck cares anything about politics. And that's what I wrote when he had that big march down there. I call it a long range bunko. You know, this guy's a con man. You know, Glenn Beck's dream is to replace Oprah Winfrey as the biggest person in TV. That's what he wants. I don't even think this guy even cared that much about politics. Just a few years ago, he was a drunk and a failure, you know, and he stumbled upon this particular stick, just like Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh had washed out, you know, everywhere, and then he came upon this hard right-wing nonsense. Rush Limbaugh has a $300 million contract. That's what he cares about, because for that kind of money, he's got to get great ratings.
Let me break in here. You know, one of the things is that there's some detail underneath all of this. And Bob Grant has been on his racist, Nazi spew for years and years. Talkers Magazine has used these people, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, Bob Grant, has been the cover story of this magazine, and in its first year, I wrote a couple of pieces for them about black talk radio, and they were going for the conversion at that time, because these radio hosts, Limbaugh and Grant, they were financing this magazine. But now they have this 100 top, and you've got people like Joe Madison and some others who allow themselves to be used to be on that top. Why would a black talk show host with a black audience want to be sandwiched in between all of those people? Because if you look at that list, it's nothing but right-wing, racist spew shows all over the country.
Well, you know, the thing is that I am going to put a tape, an audio online soon that documents my attempt to get a job on WABC Radio. Among other things, you can see, you can hear Phil Boyce, the guy that I call out in the video, and I talk about, you know, what a race he was. He was a longtime program director at WABC, and when I talked to him, he was all reasonable, you know, like you know, he really you know, was considering, you know, giving me a shot. Now, mind you, this is the time. When this happened, I was a columnist with the Daily News and one of the best-known journalists, you know, in New York, you know, and was on WBI, had a talk show there. This guy talked to me, as if he really was going to consider me, what have you. But then Scott Pellegrino called him up and assumed a different voice. He didn't know it was Scott. And he just thought, you know, this is one of his white, you know, fans and whatnot. And he told him he had no intention of hiring me. I have it on tape. You know, he didn't know nobody was listening. You said he didn't know it was being recorded. So, I mean, these people are, you know, they are evil, racist, you know, two-faced. And when you look at the question you have to ask yourself is, why does a respectable media organization like ABC allow itself to be involved with something like WABC? And the answer is simple. One of the things that Karl Marx was right about was he said that, you know, some capitalists are so greedy for power they will sell a hangman the rope to hang them with if they think they can make a profit. And that's what WABC is doing. They're willing to destabilize the country, you know, possibly risk conflicts between various groups here because it's profitable. That's why they do it. You know, they have. Now Fox is something different. Fox came out to be the voice of the right, to be a show for the Republican Party. You know, to be that's their raison d'être. That's why they came into existence. But with WABC, it's purely business, and they are willing to upset the country. They're willing to destabilize the country because that's what they do. I wonder what they think would happen if Barack Obama were assassinated. What do they think would happen in this country?
Well, you know, the thing is, I think that too is one of the dreams of destabilization. Total distraction.
But who in their right mind would want to create the kind of chaos that could result in, you know, in this country? I mean, you saw this congressman the other day.
But you already said it, Playfell, that they don't care about this country.
Well,
they
don't
care.
Go ahead.
About themselves.
Well, I don't think that they actually think that that something like this would happen. I think that they cross their fingers and hope it don't happen, but the money is too good to turn down. This is a very serious thing. This capitalist system and the way business enterprises operate, they have to continuously increase the bottom line. All executives and all companies are constantly under pressure to increase the profit margin. If you make $100 million this year, $100 million next year won't be satisfactory. You make $100 million this year, you got to make $120 million next year, you know, or whatever. And so these people are in a mad scramble. Most of these executives in remember now, these are just guys with jobs, and they're working for shareholders. And they have got to get profit for these shareholders or they won't be in these jobs. So they are in a mad dash to try to find out how they can increase their market share. Well, you all understand this because you're in this business. That's why you're doing what you're doing, and that's why I do what I do, because I don't want to play that game. You know, I'm not going to if I wanted to come up with a formula for how I could be a hit in that kind of commercial talk radio, all I have to do is get up and say I'm an ex-revolutionary. You know, and give my background and say, now I've seen the light and start spouting this right-wing, you know, born-again right-wing nonsense, and I'd become, I'd blow up overnight.
Or to campaign against President Obama.
Yeah, I'd blow up overnight.
Or to campaign against the interests of black people, or to
against
talk
all
about,
liberals, you know, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Talk the kind of
we're
stuff
have to
that,
take a break right now.
Yeah, okay.
And when we come back, I want to talk about President Barack Obama. It's really interesting. The last time you were at our common ground, it was during a period where we never would have thought that we would be in 2011 having an African-American president.
I would like nothing
country.
Better than to tell you what I think of him.
And I'd like to hear your
all
comments.
Right, well,
we'll be right
I can't
back.
Wait. Right.
For those of you who are listening at our common ground tonight, call a friend. Tell them to join us. I'm Janice Graham. Alpho is my co-host tonight, and our guest, Playfell Benjamin.
This is our common ground. Our guest tonight, columnist, writer, pundit, activist, Playfell Benjamin. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You know that the ice cream scoop can make a child smile. and that by slowing us down, the traffic light can keep us going. You know that the lawnmower makes life easier, that the blood bank makes life possible. But did you know all these ideas came from the minds of African Americans? Support the United Negro College Fund, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Visit uncf.org or call 1-800-332-UNCF. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Share it with you over time as I drop some science on your heads. In the following commentaries, you may have noticed earlier, thus far, my commentaries have been very pro-Obama. That is because I wanted to see him elected. I saw myself like Yamamoto saw himself in relation to the Japanese emperor. I was the sword of Barack Obama. However, now that he's in power, I'm shifting back to my usual role. That is the role of the press as defined in the Constitution, which I think the founding fathers got right, and that is as a watchdog over those in power and who are in charge of the public purse. So my commentaries will go increasingly critical of President Obama. I hope you all understand I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do.
You're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio, speaking truth to power and ourselves. Thank you for being with us. Our guest tonight, commentator Playfell Benjamin.
And we do thank you for being with us here at Our Common Ground with our guest, Playfell Benjamin, and my co-host is Alpha of the Alpha Show. We hope you'll catch him every Saturday at 3 p.m. at TruthWorks Network here at Blog Talk Radio. Playfell, before we went on break, one of the things that I think is so important for us to understand some of the strategies and the positioning in which our president finds himself, in which there are people who are confused about who he is and what the hell he's doing. And
you can say that again.
There are many who think that I have a friend whose intellect and judgment I trust a lot, who thinks he's a sleeper. What do you think?
Well, you say he thinks he's a what?
Sleeper.
What does that mean?
She simply thinks that he is a person that it was determined that he would be the person who does the bidding of the corporate America, and that is why he was placed.
I think that is silly, mindless, left wing claptrap is what I think. And let me just say this. I am decidedly a person of the left, but as I wrote this recently, that there's the damn fool left, and then there's the sophisticated left. I'm a member of the sophisticated left, you know. Which means that I am. First of all, I recognize that President Obama is a politician, and not only is he a politician, he's the greatest politician in the history of America. Now, I'm a former history professor, but I don't need to go to to present any evidence beyond the fact that here's a black guy who looked like any guy you might see in a pickup game on any basketball court with a nickname like Sweet Pea or something like that. Whose name is Barack Hussein Obama, mind you, not Willie Jones, you know, or Jesse Jackson, who got himself elected president of the United States, a predominantly white racist country. That's without a doubt the greatest political feat in the history of America. And anybody who doesn't understand that does not understand politics. All right. Now, that's the first thing. So he's the most skilled politician in the history of the country. Certainly, by far, the most skilled politician I have ever studied about or seen in my lifetime. That's the first thing. The second thing is that politics is the art of the possible. And this is what I had to do with, and this, I was looking for an essay here, trying to remember what I titled it, because I write so many of them I forget. But I wrote a piece where I had to chastise Cornel West. You understand? And it was called, the piece is called, you can get it, you can read it on my blog, it's called On Moral Preachment and Political Realities. You know, and the reason I had to chastise my brother, who I go on to say that I think is one of the finest men in the nation and one of the smartest, and, you know, I'm glad he's on our side and all that, even though I have had to spank him from the time to time. And this is the third time in print that I have had to do this. First time was when he advised people to vote for Ralph Nader instead of Al Gore, and we messed around and got Bush. It's the first time, you know. Second time was in a book that he and Skip Gates wrote together called On the Future of the Race, in which he said some things about Dr. Du Bois that I took absolute offense to, and I wrote a book on Du Bois, and there's a section in there in which I really take Cornel West to task in no uncertain terms. You understand? In fact, I say on this occasion that I agree with Professor Adolph Reed that he's a mile wide and an inch deep. Okay, but this last time, in which he went on TV and said that he was disappointed in the president because he wasn't like Martin Luther King. I couldn't bear any more of this, you know. So I wrote a piece and I said this: Martin Luther King was a civil rights leader. He was a preacher. His intention was to change America and make it a better place through moral suasion by appealing to people's better, what Abraham Lincoln called the better angels of our nature. Barack Obama is the president of the United States, the leader of the world, you understand? The commander of the most powerful military force the world has ever seen, the keeper of the codes to the nuclear weapons that can destroy the world. He's the ultimate insider. And Cornel West wants him to act like Martin Luther King? It's silly. You know, just absolutely silly. All right? Now, what I said to Cornel West is, listen, you are a philosopher and a theologian. You go pray. You act like Martin Luther King. I didn't elect a civil rights leader, and I didn't elect a preacher. I elected a commanding chief and a chief executive of the nation. In that respect, Barack Obama has performed magnificently. Now, for anybody who want to argue about that, bring it on, okay? I love to argue about this. Of course, I've written 120 pieces on Barack Obama, which are published online, and which looks at every aspect of his domestic and foreign policy. And I would prefer, really, that people look at them and come up and actually attack something I have written that they think, you know, that they can win an argument with me on. I would love that. But I would take the questions as they come. But let's just say this. The health care bill. Presidents of both parties have been trying to get some kind of national health care program since Theodore Roosevelt in 1904. All right? That's over a century. And you've had presidents of both parties who've tried to do this. First of all, the extremely reactionary Republican Party we see today, that wasn't always what the Republican Party was. As a matter of fact, in the early 20th century, the Republican Party was the progressive one. This is the reason why when I was a kid in Florida, all of the older black folk had been Republicans. All the people, and that's why when you see somebody like traitor, what's his name, Armstrong Williams, when you see him say things like, well, my grandfather was a Republican. Yeah, but that was a very different Republican Party from the Republican Party we have now. You understand? But the thing is that Barack Obama, he has managed to get through a program that nobody could get through. I mean, Dwight Eisenhower, for instance, was a very progressive on these issues, very progressive on the question of labor unions. Dwight Eisenhower said, you know, he couldn't see any future for a political party in this country that didn't support the rights of labor to organize and this kind of stuff. Exactly the opposite of what Republicans are saying now. But there were Richard Nixon tried to get a health care program, you know, but nobody could get this through Congress, but Barack Obama did it. That's one of the greatest political feats in American history, you know. And if you just look at all the things he's managed to do, the Lilly Ledbetter Act. When I got in arguments with black women who say, what has he done for us? Well, since most black women work, you know, they are the dominant breadwinners in the community. The Lilly Ledbetter Act, which makes it illegal to pay women less money for men than men for the same work, that is a great contribution to black Americans, to black women. What he did with the cocaine charges, the fact that he got rid of that great discrepancy between powder coke and crack, which I mean, it was a widely applauded in the black community. A lot of people went to jail for a long time. I have to tell you that even though I'm impressed that he did it, it wasn't a priority with me, because I have no sympathy with the argument that crack dealers should be given less time because it's discriminatory between them. Listen, I used to snort powder cocaine years ago. You know what I'm saying? And it's nothing like crack. Crack is another whole. I remember when crack came on the scene. It's one of the things that caused me to stop messing with it at all when I saw the devastation it was causing. People who sell crack ought to get more time. You understand? And I don't really care how long they give them, because they are enemies of the community, and so I'm not wasting any tears or time on them, period. You understand? However, he did it, and it is a question of justice. You know, he might, but that's going to help a whole lot of people who got relatives that's being sent off from now until, you know. So that's just a few of the things. You know, you could go on and on with what this president is, but the main thing about him is this. Our students right now are scoring 31st in the world in math and science. Our best students are coming in way behind China and Korea. As a matter of fact, one of the exams I looked from one of the international scientific tests, the Koreans, the Indians, and the Chinese, they pulled their students out because they said it was too easy. Our students came in something like 27th. Now, the future, I understand the white folks have this idea that the world was made for them and they're always going to be in charge and what have you. We, however, live in America, and so we have to be concerned that about what happens here. But I'm telling you that the vision that the Republican Party has for this country is not a vision which will keep this country in the leadership of the world in the 21st century. Barack Obama, on the other hand, is a visionary. He understands that what we're dealing with here in terms of this unemployment question is not the boom and bust cycle that we have witnessed in American business ever since the first panic in the 18th century, in the 1790s, you know, and then these periodic panics, the worst of which was the Great Depression, you know, when the stock market crashed in 1929. But this is a cyclic business crisis. That's not what this is, the boom and bust a crisis in capitalism. This is structural unemployment. That is, you have got millions of people who are unemployed because their jobs have disappeared, and they're not coming back. American corporations employ 11 million people overseas. 11 million people, American corporations. So then you see all of these jobs, these people who were in mass production industries and what have you, manufacturing, that's gone. And nobody has a solution to this problem. And you're going to see, people are going to see what an absolute disaster it is that they put these Republicans in charge of the Congress, because not only are they not going to solve the unemployment problem we have now, they're going to end up with tens of thousands of people becoming unemployed as a result of the policies that they're pursuing. So Barack Obama understands that the only way out of this economic morass, the only real way out of it, this crisis, is to create new industries. And that's what he was doing with this green, you know, the development of these green industries and what have you, and the money that he wants to put into research and development, the way he generously funded the National Academy of Science. I mean, the Republicans oppose all this. Look at the cuts that they want to propose. Look at what happened here in New Hampshire, where the whole town, the whole district, has fired all their teachers. And now the teachers have got to apply one by one for their jobs back, and that way they can overturn the seniority system.
I think the concern, Playfell, is simply this. House Appropriations Chairman Hal Rogers announced this week a partial list of 70 spending cuts, which would essentially, the total spending cuts in the continuing resolution would exceed $74 billion, including $58 billion in non-security discretionary spending reductions. I think that black Americans see the president having backed down When Van Jones was attacked by the Republicans, he backed down.
Yeah, but you couldn't defend Van Jones. Listen, hold on a minute. But let me say this. But you couldn't defend Van Jones, though. Here's a guy who's on tape saying that he believes that the Bush administration was behind the attack on 9/11. That's indefensible. You can't defend him. He should have let him go. You can't defend him. How can you defend somebody who says something as crazy as that? Let me tell you something. The left does have some crazy people over here, and I denounce them as quickly as I do those on the right. I denounced that. That was nonsense. I had a top-secret security clearance in the Strategic Air Command. I understand how the American Air Defense works. What they say happened could not have happened, period. And plus, I don't believe George Bush would do anything like that, period. Yes, and so Van Jones did himself in. Go ahead. He couldn't
okay.
be. He's indefensible.
But,
all right, go ahead. Yeah.
The next argument is the biggest, I think the biggest, betrayal, as people would interpret it, on behalf of that this president has done in the last 2 years, is the backing off of the GOP in their request to keep the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy.
All right, okay, let's take this. All right, let's take this. I've written about this, incidentally. I've written about it. People can go on my blog and read systematic analysis of all these questions. I've written about this, right? What was he going? I wrote a piece called, what was the name of it? On Shooting the Wounded. That's the name of the piece on it, On Shooting the Wounded. All right? And you know what I was talking about? I was talking about the people who were arguing that Barack Obama should have refused to make this compromise and let the Republicans throw 20 million people off, because that was what was going to happen. 20 million people were going to lose their unemployment. And I know, and I got in some knockdown, drag-out arguments with some people. Of course, I ended up bloodying them up, which is always the case. But I said to them, everybody I see who say let the employment benefits disappear, they all got a job. Every one of them got a job. I don't know anybody who's depending for their life on unemployment conversation who said, let them cut it off. As far as I'm concerned, listen, my position is very simple, okay? Political scientists have an axiom. It says this: in a participatory democracy, people will eventually get the kind of government they deserve, okay? It is the American electorate who put these Republican crackers in charge of the House, not Barack Obama. They did. And so he has to make compromises, because when you have a divided government, this is how it works. Okay? I think he made the right decision. He didn't want to do it. He said he didn't want to do it. But politics is the art of the possible. All right? I think it would have been irresponsible. I think it would have been equivalent to shooting the wounded to allow the unemployment compensation for 20 million people to just disappear. So I think I'm prepared to defend that absolutely. You understand? And anybody who takes the opposite position, then they are saying that they would prefer to have seen all these people suddenly with no income at all. And I bet you they got a job. I bet you they got a job.
Here's my approach. Well, here's my take on that. You know, you said that there were 20 million waiting who would have been thrown off. I mean, who would not have gotten their unemployment cut off. There were far many more 99ers who he did not take care of, that had he thrown them in the, you know, this give and take, he's always giving before the debate begins.
That's because he's a smart politician. If you can see what the end is going to be, let me just tell you this, man. I have no patience at all for people who just want to see him get in an argument and holler at somebody. The hell with that. I don't care about that. All right? What is clear what the outcome was going to be. He can count. He knows what it's going to be. He can see what the final vote is going to be. So he go on and move on. Like, okay, I got to make a compromise here. I think he has handled it all artfully and with the highest level of principle. And I would like somebody to tell me how they would have done it better. What would you have done?
Let's see if 405 has an answer to your question, Playfell, and a response to you, Alpha. 405, you're on the air. I respect you. Good evening.
I respect you also, and Alpho, and Playfell Benjamin. I want to welcome you to this forum, and I really appreciate what you have to say and what you have blogged on.
Thank you, sir.
Absolutely. I'm over here just patting you on the back, man.
Thank you, sir.
And the reason that I'm doing it is because we have to start thinking outside of the box. Most of us has been placed in this box by the power structures, the system to be. You can call it whatever label you want. You can put on it. You can put whatever oligarchy that we're operating under. You know, you can deal with white supremacy. Whatever you want to put on it, we have to recognize the origin of these problems. Where did they come from? It's just like me. Where did I come from? I don't know where I came from. I know some of them have African heritage, but I'm from wherever I left, you know, and I'm from the past and I'm from going to the future. And so when I look at what you're talking about, we're talking about an arena where this president is playing to where none of us have ever been.
Absolutely.
Nowhere near it.
Not even dream of it. Not our dreams.
And so when you begin to operate at the level that he's operating at, like you said, this man has his hand on the nuclear trigger. He's the commander-in-chief. We've had too many ministers already. Let them do the ministering because we see where we're at.
Absolutely.
We see where we're at having relied upon these ministers. And so we're dealing with a diplomat, and we're dealing with a politician, and we're dealing with a brilliant man. Now, I don't agree with all of that he does. No. Why? Because it's against some of my interests, and I'm sort of personal on that. However, we have to realize that he's in the game, and he's got to play according to the way the game is structured. And he has to try and get what he can from the arena that he's in, and walk that tightrope that he's got to walk.
Absolutely.
And
let me just,
so
I
fully understand that. You know, I'm looking at the long run. First of all, why are we depending on the president?
Good question.
Why? We've had 20 to 30, 40 years of advance notice.
Let me just say this. Just to give you one example, all right? What are we to make of the fact, excuse me, because somebody's calling here and it's going to be beeper than the phone, so just hold on 1 minute.
Don, you know, at some point I think that it gets to be balance.
I had to leave the phone for one quick minute, but what I was about to say to him was this, that You could see from the time that Barack, first of all, there's never been a president in the history of this country who inherited as many crises as he inherited when he came into office. Two major wars going on in foreign countries. You know, when Barack Obama came in, the people forget the whole world economy was on the brink of collapse because of these Republican policies. Now, the radio station that I broadcast from, WBAI, is down on Wall Street. And I happened to be down there that day when the market was about to crash, when Bush came down to Wall Street and announced TARP. You understand? But I ran out with my camera and took pictures of the brokers standing out there looking like, you know, the sword of Damocles was about to fall on their head, standing in the street watching the ticker tape out in front of the New York Stock. It's on my blog. It's called Waiting for the Axe to Fall. You understand? So I was there. I know this thing was falling apart fast. The whole world economy was on the brink of collapse when Barack Obama came in. He saved it. He saved the auto industry. People play past that like that ain't nothing. The American auto industry was gone, and the Republicans were prepared to let it disappear. You know why? Because they represent the investor class. They don't give a damn where they invest their money. They invest their money wherever they get the largest return. Brokers will tell you I have a fiduciary responsibility to my investors. That means that I am legally bound to put their money where it will give them the greatest yield. So they don't care. Whether the auto industry, but millions of workers care. He saved 3 million jobs with all of the industries that's involved with the auto industry. And he did that. He saved the Midwest. And yet they went overwhelmingly Republican. How are you going to blame him for that? We have an ignorant electorate. The problem in America today is the problem that Thomas Jefferson pointed out during the formation of this country when they were debating about whether we should have a system of free and compulsory education where everybody would have to learn how to read, write, and cipher. Most of the people argued, yes, we need the system because people need to learn how to read the Bible so they know what God intends for them. Thomas Jefferson said people need to learn how to read because a democracy can't work with an ignorant electorate. He said an ignorant electorate will elect and return the worst people to power. That is exactly what happened. And Barack Obama didn't have anything to do with any of that. What he had to do, yet he has continued to deliver the goods against the worst odds any president has ever had. And if you look at his career and his performance outside of these realities, then you are missing the point entirely.
Exactly, Playtell. And what I'm saying is that see, we need to, Janice was talking about balance. And, yes, I think there need be balance. And, I don't disagree with that. But I think that there's some responsibility that we have to take into account on ourselves. Now, see, we had to strive to get our education, most of us. We assume that everyone has been along the same paths that we've come along. Those of us in this chat room, most of us have life experiences or we have some degree measure of literacy to where we can tell the difference between come here and sick 'em. But mm-hmm. when you start dealing with the average intelligence of the average American worker, that's not the case. They are not astute, let alone in government. They're not astute in knowing how the system operates that they live in. Look at the people now up in Wisconsin. They voted this governor in.
Absolutely.
And now when they find out what they got, you got 70,000 people up there today marching around the Capitol and camping in and camping out because they find out that they blew it.
Let me tell you something. I'd like to take
like Chicago.
I'd like to take a poll and see how many people out there marching around the Capitol right now voted for these Republicans.
Exactly.
That's what I really would like to see. How many of them voted for? Because you hear, now let me just say this. When you talk about what responsibility accrues to us, I tell you one responsibility accrues to us. People were sitting around whining. I wrote a piece called A Message, an Urgent Message to the Left and Liberal Left. Stop whining and rally around the president. This was in the Democrats. This was before the election, right? They sitting around whining. I say, when you look at Barack Obama's record, actual record, and you look at what these whiners have to say, you know what it reminds me of? That old line from Ray Charles' song. I bought my baby a $500 dinner. She said, thanks for the snack. I bought $1 million house. She said, thank you, Daddy, for the shack. That's the way they strike me. I have no sympathy with the whiners at all. I think that what they did was, well, they demoralized people, they sat on their asses, and the right wing out-organized us. That's what happened. And they took the Congress back in 2 years. That the Republicans could take the Congress back in 2 years when the way they wrecked the country is absolutely outrageous. You understand? And it bespeaks the ineptness of the liberals and the left.
Exactly.
And organization.
And I'm going to say this and get off because there's other people that want to talk.
Yeah.
But I think, Playtell, that you have the right message, and I applaud you for it. I applaud you for your knowledge, and I think it's come down to we see that these weak-minded, spineless Democrats who have failed to even get in the game, let alone play it, I have no confidence in them, and therefore I look in that mirror and recognize that I've got to do for myself, and I'll help who I can. I had my neighbor here, and I was talking to him. and he was telling me that he's willing to come out and work on my land for free, just as long as I give him something off of it, and willing to buy my seed and buy this and buy that and so on and so forth. That's the time of day it is.
Where you live, sir? I'm just curious.
I live in Oklahoma. You know,
oh,
I live in
out there in Nathan Hare's country. Well, you out here because you talking about seeds and all that. You sound like the way people used to talk when I was in Florida or in South Carolina, where my father was from.
I believe in self-sufficiency as much as possible. I moved from Nuevo Mexico, which was the land of enchantment over here among these heathens over here, in order for me to get some property, in order for me to survive and to grow something on, and to have my own water supply. I started it something like 30 years ago. This didn't happen overnight.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, let me get off plate there. You continue with your...
Oklahoma. Thank you so much, and I'm still waiting for some of the harvest.
Some of that canned goods
out of your gardens.
Yeah, I got them down there too. I got potatoes, cucumbers. I got everything you need down there. Gonna have more hopefully this summer.
Well,
right.
I don't get to talk to people.
I'll be listening.
I don't get to talk to people from Oklahoma often, so this has been a pleasure.
Thank you, Don.
I'm in New York City, yo.
Chicago, you're on the air with Playfell Benjamin and Alpho at Our Common Ground. I respect you.
Hey, I respect you too, Janice. Alpho, Playfell, what's going on?
How you doing?
I'm good. I was listening to your interview. I figured I'd call in. I actually was in New York City back in 2000. Listen to BAI.
BAI, that's my station.
All the time. That's when Utrice Leeds was on there.
Did you ever hear me?
Actually, I've heard your show before too.
Oh yeah,
I didn't realize who you were.
I've been on BAI for a lot of years. Yeah, fine.
I didn't realize who you were until I actually saw that YouTube video that you posted, but I never made the connection. And then I looked at it again when they had posted in the room and realized who you were. So yeah, I've actually listened to you.
But I was real mad. I would have knocked him out if they hadn't had all them guys out there.
Actually, I
was going to roll right up on John Hand and smack him in the face if they hadn't had them guys out there.
I don't doubt that. But I called and I heard you talking about the president, and I'm one of these people that worked for him, donated the little bit of money I had, and voted for him. And I'm one of these disenchanted Barack Obama supporters.
Well, let me ask you this. I just want to ask you one question before you go any further. I want to ask you one question, right?
Mm-hmm.
As I said at the beginning, politics is the art of the possible. Okay, so now we had two possibilities. We had John McCain and Sarah Palin and Barack Obama and Vice President. Do you think we would have been better off if John McCain and Sarah Palin were in the White House?
Well, if John
McCain.
That's
just a simple question.
I
want to know yes or no. Do you think we would be better off?
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, if you don't know, then there's no
reason
to be
saying anything
else. If you don't know.
I know where we are now.
But you understand when you tell me that you don't know. But you must understand that when you tell me you don't know, I have already really pretty much decided that
but
you understand whether we would be better off without John McCain and Sarah Palin, then you definitely don't understand much about politics.
You can't know either. But if John McCain and Sarah Palin actually won, would we have got the uproar and the tidal wave that brought us the Tea Party? Yeah, I mean, when you start talking about...
You wouldn't need the Tea Party. The Tea Party would be in control of the government. You wouldn't need the Tea. What do you mean,
no,
the Tea Party? They are the Tea Party.
No, because the Democrats still had
the Tea Party.
The Democrats still had the Senate, and they would have won the presidency, but they still would have been in Congress. So they would not have swept like they were when Bush was in office. And by electing Barack Obama, that ignited their base. That's something the president didn't do.
Let me explain something to you, man. Let's just take. What do you think? When you tell me that you don't know whether we would be better off with John McCain and Sarah Palin, it's hard for me to take anything you say seriously after that. I'm really serious. I mean, I just figure this
cool.
is a guy who
I don't have
know.
Problem with
that. I mean, really, I'm just telling you how I feel. I feel like this is a guy who don't know nothing about politics. You understand what I'm saying? If you don't know that, you've just pretty much disqualified yourself with me. So you can go ahead and say whatever you want.
I can't have an opinion whether you agree with it or not.
I can't take you seriously, right?
So I can't have an opinion.
I don't care about opinions, man. Your opinions
you
have
ask,
to be based
you ask
upon
my opinion.
Opinions.
You can't ask for my opinion and not care about
it.
Why do you ask for my opinion?
Listen, man. Listen. There are opinions. Listen. There are opinions. No, listen to what I'm saying, man. Listen to what
that,
I'm
that's
saying,
what I
man.
Require.
There are opinions.
I require some consistency
well,
in the conversation.
There are
if you
opinions.
Ask for my opinion,
but
you have
listen.
To care for it, whether I agree
well,
with your opinion
well,
or not.
Well, let me just say this, man. I care nothing about uninformed opinions, all right? Period. I don't. You're saying I don't see where you have any. If you tell me that you can't see this, if you can't see that we would be, if you can't, if you don't know whether we would be better off with. I mean, how can I take you seriously if you say that?
Because
I mean, have you studied
opinion.
These people?
Same
do you
I
know what?
You
do you know what they,
whatever you say?
Do you know what they stand for? What is John McCain and Sarah Palin? You talk about the Tea Party wouldn't be in. They are the Tea Party. You wouldn't have had. Of course, you wouldn't have had the Tea Party because the Tea Party would be in office. Do you know that John McCain
well,
had
course,
listen, man? Hold on, man. Do you
it
know,
wouldn't matter
listen,
either
man.
Way.
Do you know that John McCain?
Listen,
do you know
that's
that John McCain is number one? That he has the most right wing. Listen, I'm asking you a question.
It wouldn't matter
I'm
either
asking
way.
You a question. Do you know
but
that John
no,
McCain?
No, I'm talking about what you just said.
I'm
you said
asking
it wouldn't matter either way.
I'm asking you a question.
Is that what you're telling me?
What do you know that John McCain is number one? Has the most conservative voting record in the entire Senate? Are you aware of that?
Yeah, and I'm aware
voting record in the entire Senate. Are you aware?
I understand he's anti-army, too.
But I'm saying, are you aware
he's a chicken hawk. I understand that, too.
But if you're aware of that, how can you say you don't know whether it would be different? I mean, you're not serious. This is not a serious discussion.
You said it doesn't matter. You said that they are the
Tea Party. This is not a serious discussion. It's not a serious discussion.
But you just disqualified yourself from having any kind of higher level of thinking because you said it wouldn't have mattered if they got elected because they are the Tea Party.
Let me explain something to you, listen. Let me explain something to you. You will get nowhere with this conversation here, all right? This is going to go nowhere. No, I mean, really, it's just going to go nowhere.
No, you're right, because I have my strong opinion like you have your strong opinion.
I don't care about opinions, man.
And
opinions
not that I'm
based,
trying to change
opinions
your mind
have to be based on some kind of facts. Opinions have to be based on knowledge. I don't
my
see where you know.
What
I'm,
you just
what I'm
said.
Saying is, I don't see where you understand. You don't appear to me to understand much about politics at all.
My understanding is what you just said, and my understanding.
I mean, your
what
opinion don't seem to be based on anything.
Well,
it's just
my opinion
a whim,
is based on.
You know
my
whim.
Opinion is based on. My opinion is based on evidence. Evidence so far is that Barack Obama has not changed many of the policies that Bush or Reagan. Going back 30 years, Reagan's policies.
Like which Reagan
policies?
Why don't you tell us which Reagan policies? Tell us which Reagan policies. Tell us which
down,
Reagan policies.
Trickle
which
down.
Which Reagan policies are you talking
supply
about?
Supply side economics. Same thing.
And you think,
and when
that,
he voted
you
for
think
the tax
that Barack
cut,
Obama's, you think Barack Obama's philosophy is supply side economics?
The man just said he's a big admirer of Reagan on his 100th birthday a couple of weeks ago.
And you think his policies are the same as Ronald Reagan's?
I'm sorry, what's different about it?
I say you think...
He's a sign.
Well, man, listen, here's what you need
that's
to do.
That's the Reagan
okay,
policy.
Listen, here's what you need to do, man. There's a website called What Barack Obama Has Done. You need to
yeah,
go.
Yeah,
you
I,
need
I,
to
I
go,
know.
You need to go and read it, all right? You need to go
of
and read it. Because you are, talking absolute, you are talking absolute foolishness, all right? And I don't take you seriously. It's absolute foolishness. All right? It's absolute foolishness.
They didn't list his policy changes.
All right, man.
Policy changes.
All right. You got something else you want to say?
Well, I thought we were having a conversation, bro.
Cause now I'm not having a conversation. I told you before that I dismissed you early on. I don't think that you're serious.
Well,
I don't think you understand anything about politics, and I consider it a waste of time to go on with.
After you summarily dismiss me for my opinion, I'm just telling you what I think. To tell you that not only did I know who you were before you called tonight, but actually want to have a conversation with you. So
well,
I'm not
you don't listen,
anything
man.
Anything
you
want to
have, let me just say this.
Let
me just say this. The people who used to call into my show in New York, they understood a couple of things, right? First of all, it doesn't matter to me if you don't know much, because I'm a teacher. You know what I mean? But what I absolutely will not do, you know, is deal with ignorance and arrogance together.
But you have to teach me something that I don't know. You haven't presented to me anything that I don't know yet.
Well,
you don't
okay.
know who I am. You have the benefit of me knowing who you are, but you don't know who I am, which is cool.
I just know what you say. All I'm concerned about is what you say. And anybody who says to me that they don't know whether we would be better off if we had John McCain and Sarah Palin in the White House, it's just not, I don't know what to say after that. I mean, I'm astonished. I'm breathless. I don't know what to say.
Well,
I really don't. I don't know what to say.
When you say, when I brought up the Tea Party, and you said it didn't matter because they are the Tea Party. So you add, it's a circular, add, it's a circular
argument. I really
argument.
Don't want to.
You just,
I
you
tell you, man,
the same
I really,
thing that
I really
so
don't think
matter.
We're going to get, I really don't think we're going to get anywhere with this conversation. I mean, I really don't. I don't see how, I don't see how we're going anywhere with this conversation.
I don't think so either because I'm willing to talk about, I'm willing to talk about some facts.
House music lover, let me break in here for a minute. House music lover, one of the things that I think is, you're being asked to consider is what if. And what if is a very, very important question in critical analysis.
Mm-hmm.
What if we had John McCain as opposed to Barack Obama? What if we were faced with the fact, if the White House was taken is taken over in 2012, by the Republicans, which essentially is the Tea Party.
You know, I think what if? I think
how
if John McCain and Palin were elected. Well,
pardon
I think
me?
If they were elected, we'd still be in Afghanistan. We'd still be in Iraq. We'd still have deficit spending. We would still have Republicans going after the unions. We'd still have the banks getting off scot-free with taxpayer money and regular working people.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think it would have been a good idea? Let me ask you one question. Let me ask you a question. Do you think it would have been a good idea to let the banking system collapse? I'm just asking you, do you think that would have been a good idea?
No, it wouldn't have been a good idea.
So why are you talking then about giving money to the bankers? That's what they had to do to keep the banking system from collapsing. So I'm asking, and that money is being paid back, and it's being paid back with interest. Some of them have paid it all the way back. Yes, I'm saying. So I'm asking you, why are you criticizing that unless you think that it would have been a good idea to let the banks collapse? So you think we would have been better off then?
What was the one that did collapse? Was it Bear Stearns? Was it
Goldman Sachs? Bear Stearns is one investor banking.
No, I'm talking about the entire banking system.
Not just investment. Let me ask you a question.
Where does the head of the Fed come from? Goldman Sachs. Let me ask you a question.
Do you understand the difference between investment banks and commercial banks?
Yeah, sure do.
What's the difference between them?
Well, actually, wasn't it the Tillman Act that got struck down that separated the two of them? The investment banks were not supposed to. Commercial banks are not supposed to be in the business of investing. You weren't supposed to gamble. That's what the FDIC was there for, to insure the money.
What does commercial banks do?
Commercial banks don't get in the functions that Goldman Sachs does. We know that. We know they're not supposed to. You know, they can go out and buy these T-bills and treasury bonds and invest in the community and build up and give loans and charge interest and collect money
understand?
That way.
Let me ask you another question. Do you understand that without TARP, it wouldn't have just been investment banks that would have folded? All of the banks would have collapsed?
But I already
commercial
agree with
you.
I already agree with you on that point.
Yeah. So if you agree with me on it, why are you complaining about them giving money to the banks to keep the banks alive? You can't have it both ways.
Because I'm asking.
Either you think it's a good idea that the banks collapse, or they know you
Goldman,
don't think it would.
Let Goldman Sachs survive and get the
You
money.
Know what, man? You know what?
And,
you
and
just
I heard
talked,
you. I heard
just,
you mention GM. I heard you mention GM. And I agree with you about. I agree with you about GM. And he did the right thing with GM, too. But remember, he didn't come up with the idea for GM. Chrysler got bailed out. where they put Iacocca in charge. So they just rehashed something that already worked. And
you
I
know something, man. You know what? You are a scatterbrain. You just talk. You just go from one point to the other, and it doesn't mean anything. You know what I mean? It's not a coherent argument that you're making. You're just moving from one. I tell you, man, I've had enough of this. You know, I'm not the moderator of this show. But if you were on my show, I would have bid you good night by now and taken another call.
I know. That's why I'm glad
you're
not on the board.
Oh, yeah, I would long since bid you good night on my show. Yeah, because this is
a waste
of time.
Let me.
This is a waste of time.
Before we have to end this call,
yeah.
House music lover, what is the most important thing to you that President Obama has not attended to?
I don't know if I can narrow it down to one thing, but if I'm going to do a Democratic Party, an overview, the worst thing is that he shifted the party to the right. And see, what you see, he's talking about, people call him a centrist. He's not
he
a centrist. He's
the
too
Democratic
far.
Party to the right.
This guy don't have no idea what he's talking about.
The party
he doesn't
is
have
so
any
far.
Idea
he's
what
not
he's talking about.
We're past center. We're past center right.
You don't
we're
have any
right.
idea what
and
you're
all
talking.
Of this and everything that he's capitulating to, it drives us further to the right. That's why he only gets upset at the left people in the Democratic Party. He only yells at them.
He gets upset with them because they're idiots, because they ought to know that the enemy is the
right.
damn Republicans like you ought to know. But you, listen, man, you are, it's people
it's
like you
November.
Are the reason.
That's why
it is people
he
like
lost,
you. It is people like you who are the reason why the Republicans are in control of the Congress and all these
no,
state
brother,
houses
I,
right
I
now.
Vote.
People
I
like
vote,
you. You know, people like you.
Every
no, but if anybody sit around listening to you talk, nobody would go out and vote for the Democrats after they get through listening to you. Why
no,
should anybody vote for the
after
Democrats after they listen to you? You have just sat here and said that you don't think it would have made any difference if John, and you're not even sure
if
it would have made any difference if McCain was in office.
Because John McCain is the Tea Party, and
the
Tea Party would have got in anyway.
So why would anybody want? So why would anybody want to go vote for the Democrats after they listen to you? It's people just like you who demoralize other people and they didn't go out and vote is the reason why the Republicans are in control right now.
If you can't see
that this is a disaster, you understand what I'm saying? You know, and it's because of people sitting around on their asses, you know, talking just the kind of talk you talking, instead of getting out and working to get Democrats elected to office, we got these Republicans. This is politics. There are two parties in this country. One or the other is going to be in power. If you can't tell the difference between Barack Obama and Biden and Sarah Palin and John McCain, you don't even belong in a serious conversation about politics. You really don't.
I
don't know what it is you
do. The lines
are
getting blurred, brother. If you think the lines are getting blurred.
I don't know
what
it is.
I'm not the only one that's being misled.
I don't know what it is.
Listen,
I don't know. Listen, and unlike yourself, who just go around muttering nonsense, I've written 120 specific pieces on Barack Obama's policies, all of them. So I really know what he's done and what he's accomplished and what he's been up against. What you were talking about is just a bunch of muddled nonsense. That's what it is. And yeah, you're entirely your opinion, but you don't know what you're talking about.
So I'm happy with
that.
Well, I don't think that you gentlemen are ever going to agree.
We're not
going.
I told you that. We're not going to get on. Yeah.
House music lover. One of the things that I think that we have to come to is the what if question. What are our options? And
yeah.
I totally disagree with you when you say that Barack Obama has moved the Democratic Party to the right.
That's just rhetoric.
The Democratic
rhetoric.
Party was already at the right.
That's right. That's just rhetoric, empty rhetoric. You know, tell me what specific policies you're talking about that moved the party to the right. Tell me what they are.
On what basis do you reach that conclusion?
I beg your pardon? He just ended
the Bush tax cuts. That's the right policy.
Let me ask you a question. Were you listening? We just talked about why he had to make this tax compromise. Were you listening?
Right.
Were you paying attention?
Let me ask you a question. Do you have a job?
Do you have a job?
Actually, yes, I am.
Okay, that's the reason why it's all right if they cut off unemployment benefits,
because
you got a damn job.
No, I was unemployed when he signed that, and I didn't even qualify for unemployment. I've been living off of savings. I've been living off family for over a year. So, no, I had to do without. And just like Don just called and talked about self-reliance, I've been doing that since, what, October of 2009. So
Here's the reality. The reality is that this man has made compromises that many of us on the left adamantly disagree about. And in making those compromises, I think it is more about whether or not he is doing what is in our collective interest as a community, as opposed to what he's doing about the collective interest of the country. And that is where the rubber meets the road for many people who are now so pissed off with this president. And if that is true, House Music Lover, and I've been saying this for more than 2 years when this man started running, he will only do what the landscape of political due diligence requires him to do.
That's everybody.
We allowed, we sat on our asses and allowed the Republican voice to muffle out the expectations we had of this president, and we still haven't ended up protesting and overriding the right-wing neocon discourse that goes on in this country.
We didn't just need to protest. They needed to get out and organize and get people out to the polls to vote. But instead, they were sitting around pouting, you know, and talking absolute nonsense. Let me just say this. Again, as I say before, you're saying you've got to make some effort to really try to understand what is going on. I mean, you can't just go on. You can't hear somebody say something here and pick up a bit here and pick up a bit there and have this muddled idea of what is going on. You understand? This is the reason the country's in the trouble we're in right now. You know what I mean?
I totally resent that statement if you're aiming it at me. That's not me. But let me ask you a question. Are you a Rahm Emanuel supporter?
I don't care about Rahm Emanuel. I don't know that much about him and what he's going to be as mayor. I'm talking about what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about policies. I'm talking about the policy. Listen, now I've already gone through that. I'm not going through that again just for you. If you don't understand that this has been one of the most successful
If you don't agree with me, you don't know what you're talking about.
It's not just a matter of This is not just a matter of how you feel about nothing, man. They're objective facts.
He's a loyal fan of Our Common Ground. He's here every Saturday night. We have to continue this discussion because it's just going around and around at this point.
We should have ended it long ago.
The thing is that we do have to look analytically at our realities. And the reality is that Barack Obama is a politician. We are not. We have to become activists, which is very different. And he has gotten himself in a quagmire. We expect him to stand up and defend our interests. And we need to defend our own interests. House Music Lover, I love you, and thank you so much for always being there. Playfell, say hi to House Music Lover.
Hi, but let me just say this. Everybody run their programs the way they want to. But I just want to say what my attitude is about callers. I used to always say, I don't mind it if you're ignorant, because I'm a compulsive pedagogue. You understand? I'm saying I like to teach, but if you're ignorant, you must be humble. What I cannot bear is ignorance and arrogance in combination. It is unbearable to me. You understand? I'm saying now this guy acted as if he were making some profound points where if you say you don't know the difference between Barack Obama and John McCain, how can you go on with a discussion after that? You understand? I mean, that tells me right away that I'm talking to somebody who this conversation is above his head. How do you know the difference between them? You know the difference between them by looking at what they stand for and what they advocate. And if you have done that and you can't see the difference between them, then you are in a conversation that's over your head.
Well, I got to go to a break. Thank you, Hype Music Lover in Chicago, formerly of Florida. See, he's one of our homeboys, Playfell.
I'm from Florida. Where you from in Florida, man? Where you from?
He was in Palm Beach County, and now he's in Chicago.
I thought everybody from Chicago came from Mississippi.
That ain't right, Playfell. That ain't right.
You're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio, speaking truth to power and ourselves. I'm Janice Graham. Thank you for being with us. We hope you'll stay with us. We'll be right back with more Our Common Ground. Thank you for being with us here at Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, inviting you to join us also at TruthWorks on Tuesday night, A Heart for My People with Dr. Deborah Napier. On Wednesday night, Fearless Mother with Denise Bowles. And on Saturday, It's Just Damn Radio, the Alpo Show at 3 p.m., all Eastern Time. It's the Black Truth of the event.
The act of suicide claims the lives of nearly 32,000 people annually in the United States, and an average of one person every 18 minutes dies by suicide.
Suicide is the 11th leading cause of death in the U.S. By way of comparison, homicide is the 14th.
An estimated 730,000 suicide attempts are made in the U.S. each year. Almost four times as many males as females ages 15 to 19 died by suicide. More than six times as many males as females ages 20 to 24 died by suicide.
Some possible reasons for suicide are depression, suffering, stress, grief, mental illness, family violence, alcohol or drug abuse, financial loss, and loneliness.
More than one person is affected. Each suicide intimately affects at least six other people.
Most suicide attempts are expressions of extreme distress, not harmless bids for attention. A person who appears suicidal should not be left alone and needs immediate mental health treatment. If you know someone that needs help, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255.
40%, I don't know, I think World War II is about as popular as war is going to get. The question is not whether this war is popular. The question is that the, but I'm saying that's not the question for me, all right? That's not what I'm concerned with, all right? What I'm concerned with is the fact that a crime was committed, that the President of the United States went before the Congress and lied. He knew when he said this that what he was saying wasn't true. All right, listen, if y'all don't think he knew it, I'll tell you what you do. Tomorrow, go to the Black World Today, TBWT.org, and read my piece and see that I describe everything that they now admit, right? Right down to saying that if you want to look for nuclear weapons, go to Pakistan. I said this before the war. Now I'm swift on the cap, but damn, I ain't that smart. You think I think that I could figure this out? Me, a long colored man working with one little computer up in Harlem, and Bush got $44 billion worth of intelligence and he couldn't figure it out? Bullshit. He lied. So it's a crime. He should be right now impeached. And if the Democrats win the House, he will be impeached because the chairman of the committee, whether you like it or not, John Conyers, has already written a book which is coming out stating the case for impeachment, and he will be the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. I think a crime was committed, and not only, I think a crime was committed here,
and I think a crime was committed in international law. He says that Iraq, you know, forfeited their sovereignty. Everything that he said about Iraq, the United States has been guilty of in its history and worse. You understand? So if their sovereignty should be forfeited, so should this country.
Mr. B, can I consider that your closing statement?
I don't know. I would.
And we thank you so much for being with us here at Our Common Ground. Our guest, Playfell Benjamin. And that was a very spirited round and around conversation with house music lover of Chicago and our guest. And I think that's the kind of conversation, Playfell, that's going on all over this country.
Yeah, but you see, the thing about it is that for a conversation to really be fruitful, it must be informed by facts. People have to agree on certain basic ground rules, you know. I mean, it's like trying to argue with somebody about whether, you know, water is wet. I mean, you have to have certain assumptions. You have to agree. When he says evidence, where's the evidence? You know, evidence in this situation means let us look at what the policies have been, you know, of both sides. When Barack Obama looked like he was had a chance of winning, I wrote the first piece on him, the first of what is now 120 pieces. The first piece I wrote was a piece called Can Barack Obama, a man for all seasons, can Barack Obama transcend race and transform America? And I said in this piece that even if he wins, people must understand that we are not electing an emperor. We're not. He will not be able to wave his scepter and just make all your dreams come true. He's not Barack the Magic Negro, you understand, which a lot of them seem to be disappointed to discover that he's not. I pointed out that we have a threefold division of power. We have a system of checks and balances in this country. And actually, I like the way our government is set up because it makes it hard for a dictatorship to arise, makes it impossible because you have these checks and balances, and then you have an independent judiciary. The problem is, like right now, for instance, and why it's so important as to which party is in power and who's in the Oval Office is because presidents get to appoint members to the Supreme Court. The problems, all the problems that we're having right now and what may happen with the whole health care program that Barack has managed to pass after over 100 years of presidents of both parties trying to get such a program, he made it a reality. But we got a right-wing Supreme Court, and you got 16 attorney generals of these southern states and what have you who have challenged this. And this now, and you have some of these right-wing judges that the Republicans have put on the bench and on the district level who have already said, a couple of them have already said, that the program is unconstitutional. And so it's going to go before the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court says it's unconstitutional, they will kill it. You understand? Now, of course, there will be an alternative. The alternative then is to go back and really put the public option in, but you can't do that if you don't, Democrats don't have control of the Congress. The fact is, here's the thing. People can talk all they want to, but the fact remains, we have two parties in this country, and one of the other party is going to be in office. As I said at the beginning of this, politics is the art of the possible. If it is not possible, it is not politic. It belongs to religion or philosophy or somewhere else. But if it's politics, it is only political if it, by its very nature, if it is possible. Now, so what Barack Obama or any president has to do is to get his, first of all, get his legislative initiatives passed by the Congress and that they be deemed constitutional by the court. In a complex game like this, there's only so much one man can do. The question is, Barack Obama ought to be judged on two things: what he stands for, the policies he advocated, and what he has managed to achieve. The things that they criticize him for are things that were forced on him by the politics of the situation. They keep talking about, you understand, the giving money to the banks. So I ask people, you know, do you think we would have been better off if the banks had been allowed to? That's just ignorant claptrap. You understand what I'm saying? That's just nonsense. You know, anybody
also
who thinks.
Also, a dismissal of that the banks were bailed out by Bush.
By
policy,
Bush anyway.
Not
yeah,
by
an Bush.
Obama policy.
Yeah, but it was TARP. It was the Bush thing. That's another thing. They keep confusing that. What Barack Obama did was to pass the National Recovery Act, which is what kept all these people on the jobs. And now that the money is running out and the Congress won't let him get another one, you see what's happening now, the chaos in all these states where thousands of people are going to be losing their jobs.
Deep enough. From the very beginning on the stimulus package.
Well, he got the best that he could get. He got the best that he could get.
Exactly.
But you had people like Paul Krugman, the Nobel Prize winning economist who writes for the Times. Paul Krugman was saying from the very beginning that this stimulus needed to be twice the size that it was. He was saying that from the very beginning. It should be twice the size. But Barack Obama is not a king. He can't just wave his hand and make things happen.
The reality of the situation is when they first started going after and placing Bush problems on this administration, we weren't there. We abandoned this man when they went on the attack, and he knew that he was standing, and we, the people who put him there, didn't have his back.
And then got mad because he couldn't wave his hand and make everything happen that they wanted to happen. And now they're messed around and let the Republicans take – that's on us. You know, that's on the American electorate that these the Republicans are backing. And look at what they're doing. They hate the working people. They hate the public interest. I mean, there's no question about it. All Republican policies – I've been writing about this when I was at the Daily News. That's what got me run away from the Daily News, where I was constantly saying these people are contemptuous of the public interest. Anything that has to do with promoting the public, they want to privatize everything. They want to privatize the post office. You know, and people are sitting up complaining about Barack Obama when the devil is on the other side. You understand? I mean, the devil, for real, is on the other side. And they're sitting here complaining about their friend while these people are taking over the Congress again. And if they don't watch it, they're going to take over the White House if they keep talking this kind of nonsense that they're talking. Instead of getting behind him and fighting it, you know.
I really appreciate your visiting at Our Common Ground. We're going to have you back, Plato, because
anytime.
Do want to talk about the attack on labor in this country, and I think you've done a fabulous job in documenting that. And for those of you who are listening, you should go to commentariesonthetimes.com.
WordPress.com. Commentaries on the Times. WordPress.
I'm posting it in our.
.com. Yeah, all right. Yeah. You have to put WordPress in.
I'm posting it in our chat room because you've done your piece, Wisconsin is Cairo.
Yeah, but that's not, let me just say this. That's not my piece. I didn't write that. That piece was written by a former student that I knew in Amherst when I was a professor. He is now a professor of labor history at McAllister College. If you look at the bottom, you see that. And this is a labor historian, a young black labor historian who is really fabulous. I wrote a piece called Time for a National Strike, which is on there. But this piece that you were talking about, Madison is Our Cairo, was written by Dr. Peter Ratcliffe at McAllister College in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Right.
And you are right. It is a brilliant piece. It will tell you everything you need to know about why you need to be out fighting in defense of unions.
Yep. Plato, thank you so much for being
with us.
And I do want people to know that Commentaries on the Times and the WBAI commentary that he does weekly will be appearing on Truthworks Network very soon.
Fabulous.
Plato, I'm just so glad to have you back in the fold.
Well, I'm delighted. You know what I mean?
Call me. Having you again.
Call me anytime.
Anytime
you see a commentary of mine that you would like to discuss in some detail, just call me, you know, and we'll discuss it.
I will.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye, James. Bye.
Bye-bye. That was
Plato. Bye, Plato. I'm here, too.
We want to thank all of you for being with us. We want to do our final Black History feature for this year. And to let you know that on Tuesday night, A Heart for My People at 8 p.m. On Thursday, Fearless Mother at 8 p.m. And next Saturday at 3 o'clock, The Alpha Show at 8 p.m. on Truthworks Network. And I'll be right back here. We're still trying to reshuffle our appointment with Clarence Lussain, who's the author of a history of blacks in the White House. Alpo, thanks for being with us, and we'll see all of you next Saturday here at Our Common Ground, speaking truth to power and ourselves. Thank you to all of our callers, our Black History feature, and our close. Tonight at Our Common Ground, in honor of Black History Month, as we close the 2011 season of Focus on Black History, we remember the bard, the genius, the brilliance of James Baldwin.
There are days, this is one of them, when you wonder what your role is in this country and what your future is in it. From my point of view, no label, no slogan, and no party, and no skin color, and indeed no religion, is more important than the human being.
Now, when you were starting out as a writer, you were black, impoverished, homosexual. You must have said to yourself, gee, how disadvantaged can I get?
Well, no, I thought I hit the jackpot.
Oh, great.
It was so outrageous you could not go any further, you know. It had to be, so you had to find a way to use it. My father came from New Orleans, my mother came from Maryland, and if they had waited, you know, two more seconds, I might have been born in the South. The first house I remember was on Park Avenue, which is not the American Park Avenue, or maybe it is the American Park Avenue.
Uptown Park Avenue.
Uptown Park Avenue, where the railroad tracks are. We used to play on the roof, and I can't call it an alley, but near the river. It was a kind of dump, garbage dump. Those were the first scenes I remember. I remember my father had trouble keeping us alive. There were nine of us. And I was the oldest, so I took care of the kids. And dealt with Daddy. I understand much better now. Part of his problem was he couldn't feed his kids. But I was a kid and I didn't know that. And he was very religious, very rigid. In fact, in a word, he wanted power. He wanted Negroes to do, in effect, what he imagined white people did. That is to have, to own the houses, to own U.S. Steel. And this is what, in effect, killed him. Because there was something in him which could not bend. He could only be broken.
You think your pain and your heartbreak are unprecedented in the history of the world. But then you read. It was books that taught me. The things that tormented me the most were the very things that connected me with all the people who were alive or had ever been alive. I went to the 135th Street Library at least three or four times a week. And I read everything there, I mean every single book in that library. In some blind and instinctive way, I knew that what was happening in those books was also happening all around me. And I was trying to make a connection between the books and the life I saw and the life I lived.
You've been listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham, speaking truth to power and ourselves. Thank you for being with us tonight. Join us each Saturday night for Our Common Ground.